Continuing with discussion of Vishnu Sahasranama, name 897, Sanat. I'm particularly discussing this name in the context of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, being time. It's taking us quite some time to go through this discussion, been through more than 10 sessions now. It's time well spent, and I appreciate those devotees who have taken the time to listen to these talks. I'll start this present talk today on a quotation from Krishna book. He, Krishna, is truth in all the three phases of eternal time. Time is divided into past, present, and future. Krishna is truth always, past, present, and future. In the material world, everything is being controlled by supreme time in the course of past, present, and future. But before the creation, Krishna was existing. And when there is creation, everything is resting in Krishna. And when this creation is finished, Krishna will remain. Therefore, he is the absolute truth in all circumstances. So this is a theistic, Krishnaistic perspective, or an actual, proper, correct perspective on past, present, and future. Various philosophers have speculated on the nature of time, past, present, and future. We can discuss, as I've already discussed in this series of talks, various perspectives on past, present, and future. I'm going to read or paraphrase now from an English edition with commentary on the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, which was published by Professor Edwin Bryant. Basically, juxtapositioning the commentaries of various previous commentators on the Yoga Sutras. One feature of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, those who are familiar with this will know, is Ishvara Pranidhana. The term Ishvara comes. Now, this Pranidhana, that may be understood in various ways. Devotion to Ishvara, awareness of him. Ishvara, of course, is a synonym of Bhagavan, not as complete a synonym, not as complete in meaning, but we do have in the Yoga Sutras, generally people think that the yoga process leads to some impersonal goal, but we do have mention of Ishvara, and not just mention, but is given great importance. So Edwin Bryant presents this understanding of Ishvara, one of the ways in which Ishvara, the controller, God, is to be understood is this way, is that those who went before us, the ancients, they were subject to time, kala, which means they were mortal beings, they had finite lifespans. The one who is not subject to time is Ishvara. He transcends time, and he is the guru even of the great personalities of the past. Moreover, just as Ishvara existed as the perfect being at the beginning of this creation, so he was in previous creations. We'll see that this fully overlaps with, correlates with the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, the commentators on the Yoga Sutras, they hold that this is what differentiates Ishvara from beings like the Brahma, the demiurge, the secondary creator, whose immense lifespan encompasses the duration of one universal cycle, the coming into being of a whole universe, the existence of a whole universe, and the ultimate winding up of a whole universe. That is the time of Brahma's lifespan. But ultimately, he has to die. Eventually, everyone has to die. He's also a created being. And like everyone else, if he doesn't get liberated at the end of his life, then he has to be reborn in the next cycle of creation. However, Ishvara is not a created being. He is not subject to birth, death, cyclical creation, or any other manifestation of time. Time in the yoga school means the movement of the three modes of material nature. Or to put it in a manner that we can understand more easily, matter moves. Remember, we discussed calculation of time from the atom. Matter moves, and that is the manifestation of time. What is a day? It is based on the apparent movement of the sun in the heavens. What is a season? It's a movement of nature within a cycle. What is a year? That is calculated in terms of the Earth's movement around the sun, or relativistically, the sun's movement around the Earth, or whatever. What is a lifetime? Lifetime. It's the movement of one body from birth to death in time. What is a civilization? It is the existence of a society with its values, its culture, its influence within a certain period of time. We had the Babylonian civilization, the Carthaginian civilization, the Roman civilization. They came into being and they ceased to exist. Of course, we can't say as exactly as we can say that a child is born and then dies, as a specific time can be noted. But we can say for sure that there was a time when there was no Roman civilization. There was a time when it existed and it came to an end. Of course, the city of Rome is still there, but when we're talking about the ancient Roman civilization, it had a beginning and an end. So time is that which marks the movements of people and events and edifices and monuments. They come into being, and dust thou art, unto dust thou shalt return. Everything comes into being from primordial matter. Everything returns to that. There's a whole cycle. I eat, I drink, I breathe. Within the body, that is all processed, and that becomes fat, muscle, marrow, bone, stool, urine. Energy is generated for the movement of the body, for the activity of the mind. But everything, all of this is going on in time. This is the movements of matter in time. Dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. But the spirit is not subject to time. That's not from the yoga school directly, exactly. In the Sankhya and yoga philosophy, which are practically the same, in many ways they're the same, everything in this world is seen as a product of the interaction and the movement of the gunas, the modes of material nature, which underpin Prakriti. Of course, in theistic Sankhya, there is Ishvara. There's Atma and Ishvara. So it's not just matter. In the Bhagavad Gita also, aparayamitas tvanyang prakritim vidhime param, Jiva Bhutang Mahabaho Yayedam Taryate Jagat. What makes the Jagat? Gachati Iti Jagat. That which moves is called the Jagat, the universe. That which makes this matter move is spirit, the individual spiritual beings under the direction of Ishvara, the Supreme Lord. We are subject to time. As long as we identify with this material world, we're subject to time. We can access the teachings of great personalities of the past, Krishna, Patanjali, Christ, Buddha, Abraham, Muhammad, but not directly. Not directly in as much as I can't talk directly to Buddhadev, because our situation in time is different. They were present in a different configuration of the modes of material nature, which we call a previous time, a previous age. But Ishvara is transcendent to time. He is transcendent to the laws of this material world in which everything is created, everything is destroyed. People, according to their free will, act and produce karma. He is above and beyond all these constraints which limit the embodied being's capacity to control their destiny. We may think, I'm in charge of my destiny. I am the controller, but we are controlled. Ishvara is beyond such control. We don't control when, where, how we get different bodies. Ishvara controls. Ishvara can come within this world. He does come within this world. He breaks into, or he enters into, this limited world, remaining unlimited, and teaches great personalities that we are not part of this world, which is constrained by time. Time is an inexorable, insurmountable limitation. Ishvara is beyond that. By nature, we are beyond that. Here is a saying. The past is where you learn a lesson. We should be learning all the time. The now, the present, is when we apply the lesson. And the future is where a lesson, well learned, gives its reward. Got that? The past is where we learn. In childhood, we're meant for learning. Actually, all of life has been for learning. Now, at the present, we should apply all that we have learned, and in the future, we will get the reward of doing so. Here is a quote which when I first read it, and even when I read it again, strikes me as being quite phenomenal. From the Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, Text 2, there are a few verses which appear at the end of this chapter, which are not given by all commentators. Srila Prabhupada quotes, they're given by Madhvacharya, Srila Prabhupada's translation, "Everything happening within time, which consists of past, present, and future, is merely a dream. That is the secret understanding in all Vedic literature. Merely a dream. It doesn't have ultimate reality." I'll get back to that. How time, everything in this world is just like a dream. Time. We learn about, some people are very interested to learn about ancient Greece, ancient Rome, But it seems like, yeah, it seems like a dream, doesn't it? Something, we know, yeah, you can go to Rome and see the Colosseum. You can see the remnants of an ancient civilization, but it doesn't seem as real to us as the world in which we live now. We hear about fighting going on in different parts of the world. In Ukraine at the present time, fighting is going on. We feel, I hope we feel, so disturbed by that. We hear of current atrocities or disasters, and that jars us. Even now, there are not many people in the world who are even alive at the time of Hitler, but even now there is a fascination with Nazi Germany and the atrocities that were perpetuated. But if we hear about the draconian rule in ancient Rome, or in the Roman Empire, where a local governor, like Pontius Pilate, could just decide on the spot, this man should live, this man should die. Of course, Pontius Pilate is very famous in the Christian tradition. But yeah, we hear about gladiators and Christians being sent to the lions to be publicly killed by lions. When we hear about Genghis Khan overrunning the steppes of Russia and the hordes of the Mongols, that must have been horrific for the people who were subject to that, but it doesn't impact us as much as if we hear about present disasters. It's as if we have no real connection with the ancient past. We feel the immediate past much more strongly. If we hear that, well, maybe in 20 million years, the sun will burn up, the earth will burn up. It doesn't really bother us that much, but if we hear, oh, there is, but if we hear there's an asteroid hurtling toward earth and there's a danger it may hit the earth and cause tremendous damage right now in the next few days, or maybe in a month's time, we feel some concern about that. The immediate past and the immediate future, we seem to have some connection with them, but we don't seem to have any connection with bygone ages or time well into the future. Of course, there may be. I gave the example of Pontius Pilate. Devout Christians still feel very strongly the events that happened in Jerusalem at that time, because they feel a strong bond with the personality of Jesus Christ. Pontius Pilate asks, "What is truth?" and washes his hands. It's an event which took place 2,000 years ago, but still, people are trying to work. What does it mean when he? What mood did he say that in? What is truth? He said to Jesus. He's recorded as having said that. So it means something because we impute importance to it. But otherwise, at the same time Pontius Pilate was asking Jesus Christ, what is truth? There were so many things going on in the Roman Empire. In terms of the whole Roman Empire, the act of Pontius Pilate condemning Jesus to death or washing his hands. It's the Jews who killed him, they say, not, not the Romans. It was not a major event. There's so many people being crucified, just another Jew being crucified from the Roman Empire's point of view. Just so many things going on. What does it matter? Something happened 2,000 years ago. Sometimes, for instance, making a new building in some old city, the earth is excavated and they find so many bones, so many human skeletons going back hundreds of years. But no one feels for those people. No one cares for those people who previously were the inhabitants of those skeletons. So what's the point I'm making here? Is that time seems to be like a dream or almost non-existent the further it recedes into the past or the further it's supposed to be in the future. There are something. I gave the example of the crucifixion narrative of crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Grudges can be maintained over centuries. In Ireland, still between Protestants and Catholics, hundreds of years later, there's still remembrance of the Battle of the Boyne when William of Orange defeated the Catholic forces. Still, there is remembrance in Armenia of the Armenian genocide, which according to Turkey didn't happen at all, over 100 years ago. It's a big thing in the Armenian conscience. Britain, and now by extension the United States, has for centuries harbored a sense of enmity with Russia. It just goes on and on and on and on. The battle of the Crimea. British soldiers charged, the charge of the Light Brigade in Crimea. The British were fighting in Crimea some hundreds of years ago, and that is maintained in the national consciousness. We don't like Russians. So some things go on. It'd be much more laudable if loving feelings were maintained over hundreds of years, rather than meaningless rivalry and enmity. There's no real reason for Britain, and now by extension America, to endemically distrust Russia. That's the nature of the material world. It's maintained over centuries. Ridiculous. Okay, let's get back to some other perspectives on past, present, and future. As discussed before, the past and the present are fixed. They are unidimensional in as much as they are what they are. Of course, there may be different interpretations of what happened in the past. There may be different claims of what happened in the past and even of what's happening at present. But what actually happened and what's actually happened is as it is. From our perspective, the future has unlimited possibilities. It's uncertain, and in that respect, multidimensional. Multidimensional. Or maybe not, according to various scientific interpretations or philosophical interpretations. There are strict determinists, like Richard Dawkins, who believes that the way the Big Bang banged and what happened after that, everything banged out and bonged out, and the way everything is going on is fixed, and although there is some apparent free will, there isn't at all. This is strict determinism. Everything is fixed. It's not a very popular philosophy. Even Richard Dawkins himself doesn't seem to like it very much, because it goes against our intuition, our gut feeling, that we do have some measure of free will. And Copenhagen interpretation of quantum theory gives multidimensionality in or certain interpretations of the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum theory gives that, considering there are multiple possibilities of every entity doing something, like just like I'm sitting here now. Okay, now my hand is here. In the next second I could lift it, or I could lift it like that, or I could lift it like that, or I could clench my fist. I can move my head, or I can move it further. There are unlimited possibilities of what one living being can do, and according to some certain interpretations of quantum theory, whatever is possible happens. So there are unlimited multi-universes in which all kinds of possibilities are fulfilled. Maybe you can come up with such a thing by mathematical speculation, but it doesn't seem to make much sense in reality. What is reality? Reality we can see in terms of past, present, and future is that what is now the present just slides into the past and becomes the past. So we can't grasp the present. The future doesn't exist yet. And when it does come to exist, it's the present, which is sliding into the past, which no longer exists. This is Saint Augustine's observation. Of course, there are others before him. Therefore, Augustine came up with the question, well, what is time? What can time be? How can we understand what is time, given the common sense perception that time must be in one of three phases, past, present, and future? And yet none of these can really be said to exist. The past is gone, the future hasn't come, the present is not the present. As soon as you try to pin it down, it's gone. So how can you say time is real in any real sense? And then, again, talking about determinism. And then where does free will come in all of this? Free will means that we have a choice what we're going to do at present, and that affects our future. According to strict determinism, if you knew everything about a person, and you knew everything about the correlates of all the atoms and subatomic particles within the body, if you had full and perfect knowledge of the past, you should be able to predict with certainty the outcome of a choice by a free agent. We don't like that. That means there is no free will. Actually, we do have free will. We have a particular nature. You can make predictions. You could predict that if you slap a certain person in the face, he'll react by slapping you back because you know his nature. Or you could, with someone else, if you slap someone in the face, he would simply tolerate it, turn the other cheek, talking about Jesus again. We can try to predict how a person would react according to their nature, their ingrained habits, their predisposition. You could try to predict how someone would react in a certain circumstance. But free choice is there, which means you can't say for sure what anyone would do, how they would react. The game of chess, like so many other games, is based on trying to predict how the other will, how the opponent will react. What to speak of war games. When we talk of war games, it's something like a game, but it's damn serious. You have to try to predict what the other person will do, how they will react. There are so many tricks are played in war to you can't be sure how the other party is going to react. That's why within our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we may sometimes say, well, Srila Prabhupada would have said this, he would have said that, and if Prabhupada was present now, he would have done this, or he would have done that. You can't say for sure. That's why we always need living interpreters of the past acharyas. Exactly how Prabhupada would have, what he would have said. Of course, we know he wanted devotees to follow the four regulated principles. So we could say in general, if someone who's one of his disciples breaks the four regulated principles, we could predict that Srila Prabhupada would be unhappy. Specifically how he would react to it, it's hard to say. We can't say with any degree of certainty. We always need living interpreters of the past acharyas. That's why Ritvikism fails. Another reason. In astrology, I'm going to speak something about astrology now. There is a process called prashna, in which you can ask a question and make some prediction or take some guideline of how you should act in a certain circumstance. What we're looking at in astrology, I'm not an astrologer, I don't know about quantum theory. I've taken little bits and pieces here and there, and I'm putting together what I know, according to my limited knowledge. So, in astrology, you can look at the birth chart. A competent astrologer, trained astrologer, he knows that the birth chart reflects the sum total of the karma of that living being at that particular time. But after birth, that person, as he grows older, exercises free will. So the birth chart is there, but how we act will continue to influence our future. So you can't tell exactly from the birth chart how someone will behave. It may be that they get association with a great saintly person and their outlook changes. Or it may be that they perform some really bad act. They misuse their free will. And then their future trajectory somewhat changes. But with prashna literally means question. You can zoom in on at a particular time and say, this is the situation right now. This is the current state of affairs. Taking into consideration all the previous karmas in previous life and what has transpired in between. Talking about astrology, astrology looks into the past, looks into the future, gives advice for the present. There is considerable anecdotal evidence that astrology works at some level. People are often surprised how astrology can make accurate assessments of the past and the future. There are so many, it used to be fairly common in India. I've had certain experiences like that myself, where you just meet a person who you never met before, and they tell you that in future such and such a thing is going to happen to you. And it happens. But considering that there is considerable anecdotal evidence that astrology works at some level, according to the degree of competence of the astrologers, then if scientists were actually open-minded and interested in understanding how the world works, they should research how and why astrology works. But the science of scientism, the scientismists, they scoff. It can't work. It doesn't fit our paradigm, our worldview. And if they do research it, they research it in such a way that it's designed to, quote-unquote, prove that it's wrong. Rupert Sheldrake, he's pointed out in his book, The Science Delusion, as in his talks also, that scientists, they haven't seriously studied paranormal phenomena. There's tremendous anecdotal evidence, reincarnation for that matter, that there are paranormal phenomena, but scientism will not admit it. For them, paranormal phenomena, reincarnation, for the so-called scientists, paranormal phenomena, reincarnation, astrology, it must be wrong, has to be wrong, doesn't fit with our understanding of the universe. They fear to open-mindedly research it, which shows that they're not scientific. Anyway, getting back to perspectives on past, present, and future. Some people suppose that past, present, and future are all made of the same stuff. In one sense, you can say that's true. It's the interaction of matter with spirit. The people who say past, present, and future, they're objectively of the same nature. They conceive of time using the analogy of an old-fashioned movie projector, in which there's a spool of film reel which goes through the projector. So the present is like the frame directly behind the lens, according to this understanding, which is presently being projected. The past is like that which has been projected on from the spool. And the future is that stuff which is about to come into the spool. Thus, they say, the future is fixed and determinate, just like the past. It's already set up. It's going to happen like that. It's fixed and unalterable. Again, we're coming to strict determinism. But the future is not like that. You can say it's going to be like that. Strict determinism means there's no good, there's no bad. A multi-murderer, serial killer, he's just doing what he was impelled to by time, by fate. Of course, the judge in the court said, well, I'm also sentencing you to death. I'm impelled by fate. But the question of good and bad and intent, motives, all go out if we take this strict determinism. The future, what is the future? Indeterminate, fuzzy, fluid. How does God see the future? Well, he knows certain things are going to happen. Just like I can say, at present, in the background to this sound that I'm speaking, there's a sound of a loudspeaker playing some music in some nearby village. So that's happening at present, that has happened in the past, and no doubt it will happen in the future also. Now it is summer, and in the future there will be winter as there was in the past. So one explanation of Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita, Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishyani cha bhutani mantaveda kaschana. Krishna says, I know everything in the past, present, and future. Me, no one knows. One explanation of this is that Krishna, he knows the general picture of past, of the future, but he gives everyone free will, so there is indeterminacy. There is the freedom of living beings to act. They all have their freedom to act. The Supreme Being has boundless freedom, but he gives us a little freedom. And the decisions that the tiny living beings make, we exercise our free will, endows the future with elements that are indeterminate. There are so many alternative possibilities. Some things in the future are fixed with a high degree of certainty, just like in the future there will be winter. In the future there will be loudspeaker sounds from nearby villages. The Vedic literature describes the great movements of time through the great yuga cycles. Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwarapa Yuga, Kali Yuga, then 1,000 such cycles. That is one day of Brahma, and then Brahma's night. We know that Kali Yuga, things are getting worse day by day. Tatashchanudinam Rajan, Satyam Socham Shamadaya, Kalena Balina Rajan, Nangshantyayur Balang Smritihi. At the beginning of Kali Yuga, it was predicted that with every day of this Iron Age, all good qualities such as truthfulness, cleanliness and purity, tolerance, compassion, lifespan, bodily strength, mental strength, they will all diminish day by day. So those who learn from Vyasadeva is Trikalagya. He knows the past, present, and future. We can learn from Vyasadeva, and we can, to some extent, understand the nature of past, present, and future from the Vedic literature. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, explains Vyasa's vision with this example. As an astrologer can see the future fate of a man, or an astronomer can foretell the solar and lunar eclipses, those liberated souls who can see through the scripture can foretell the future of all mankind. I'm going to read from Srila Prabhupada's translation of Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, text 46 to 48, spoken by the Yamadutas to the Vishnu Dutas. They say, O best of the demigods, we can see three different varieties of life which are due to the contamination of the three modes of nature. The living entities are thus known as peaceful, restless, and foolish, as happy, unhappy, or in between, or as religious, irreligious, and semi-religious. We can deduce that in the next life these three kinds of material nature will similarly act. Just as in springtime, in the present, is an indication of the nature of springtimes in the past and future, so this life of happiness, distress, or a mixture of both, anishtam, ishtam, mishram cha, Bhagavad Gita, happiness, distress, or a mixture of both, gives evidence concerning the religious and irreligious activities of one's past and future lives. The omnipotent Yamaraj. The Yamadutas mistakenly thought Yamaraj to be omnipotent. The omnipotent Yamaraj is as good as Lord Brahma, for while situated in his own abode, or in everyone's heart like the Paramatma, he mentally observes the past activities of a living entity and thus understands how the living entity will act in future lives. Not untrue, but not fully true, because there are constraints on things, there are paradigms, there are patterns, but all of this, even the tremendous force of our previous karma, cannot annihilate the little minute independence we have, which gives a degree of indeterminateness for any future time frame. It may be in the next 5 minutes, it may be the next 50 years. And it can fluctuate. Shall I do this? Shall I do that? We may change our mind. There are indeterminacies of the future. They cease to be indeterminacies as the future becomes the present and then the past. But that's due to the decisions of free agents. What do we as free agents do? We're acting in the present. We know what's there in the past. And according to that, we try to understand what will happen in the future. Now, I've said several times in the course of these talks, including in this talk, that the past, present, and future don't exist. Well, they do exist in some sense, otherwise we couldn't even talk about them or even conceive of them. They're not totally unreal. There are levels of non-reality. Square circle. That is a non-reality. Because by definition, a circle cannot be square. What about rabbit's horns? That's conceivable. A square circle is not conceivable. Rabbit's horns are conceivable, but they don't actually exist. Getting back to a dream, we spoke about dreams. Dreams are unreal, but they also have some reality. Otherwise, we wouldn't experience things in dreams. But they're not as real as the waking state. Now, we can say the waking state is also unreal because, just like a dream, it comes into being, it goes, there's nothing left. But a dream is not as real as the also unreal or illusory waking state, because a dream is seen by one, generally. It's not a shared experience. The past doesn't exist. But it doesn't exist in the same way that a square circle or rabbit's horns do not exist. It did exist. We can confidently say there was a World War I. There was a World War II. We can confidently say that there will be a future. Now it is summer, we can confidently say there will be a winter in future. The present doesn't exist in one sense, but it is a continuum, it's a present continuous. Now it is summer, if I say now it is summer, this is perceived not as an instant, but as a continuous reality. So although Augustine and others before him, like Sankhya philosophy, Buddhists, was partially right in saying that time doesn't exist and is just a mental construct, he wasn't totally correct. That's an example of how philosophers mess up by their speculating and cause all kinds of mess-ups in understanding of reality. If time doesn't exist, then nothing exists, because everything exists within time. God exists beyond time. But you can't even say that God exists if you don't accept that time exists. Because there's no meaning to say that God is beyond time if time doesn't exist. So indirectly, although Augustine was considered a saint, he co-opted the seeds of atheism, and there are others also. In the 20th century, there was Catholic priest Teilhard de Chardin. He philosophically despiritualize the Roman Catholic Church by positing that just like there is biological evolution, if we accept biological evolution, which the Roman Catholic Church does. So Teilhard de Chardin, he posited that God and religion also evolve. Even before him, Aurobindo Ghosh, a great philosopher of the 20th century, Indian spiritualist philosopher, he also spoke about the evolution of consciousness, that in its very essence, consciousness evolves. So what if you say that God is also evolving, religion is also evolving, then you're placing God under the influence of time instead of beyond time, outside of time. The whole idea of biological evolution sits with the Big Bang Theory, in which there is pre-time or no time. And so if you say God is evolving, then God is also a product of matter. Unfortunately, such philosophers, even though their names are not very widely known to the public, they have been tremendously influential in atheistic conceptions of the world, directly, indirectly, New Age pantheism. What about Einstein, his notion of time-space as one phenomenon? We often hear this, time-space, it's one construct. Albert Einstein wrote, "The distinction between past, present, and future is only an illusion, however persistent." Now, it might seem that this is so if you do all your math and you apply that to what is observed in the universe. It might seem that time and space are one entity, time-space, and that past, present, and future, there's no difference. It's all the same. But it's nonsense. Even if Einstein says, it's nonsense. Einstein, he can be Einstein squared. But if you say there's no difference between past, present, and future because it appears like that to you according to your mathematical calculations, it's nonsense. There is a difference between the past, present, and the future. That's the problem with trusting so-called science over that which is obviously factual. We cannot imagine existence without time, which means that there is past, present, and future. That time and space are different, and there is thought, consciousness. The Advaitavadis, Neo-Advaitavadis of India, they love to cite quantum physics to posit that everything is all one. But they got it wrong. They got it wrong. I'm not a scientist or a mathematician on the level of Einstein, obviously. But it's something like the emperor's new clothes. The fact is he doesn't have clothes on. So if Einstein says there is no difference between space and time, past, present, and future, he may be what he considers to be scientifically correct. But he's out of touch with reality. Reality we have to understand from the person beyond reality. Reality we have to understand from the person who knows it all. That is Krishna. That is God. That is the point of all these talks. So there are some perspectives on past, present, and future. Predictably, it's getting dark here as the sun is setting. We can predict future. Tomorrow there will be sunrise. But now it's time to stop this talk. Vancha kalpa thrubhya sharkipa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nitaya chunakam padayo nipatya kritvaja kalkushatam etad aham bravimi hei sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad gauranga chanda charne kuruta. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanama karona vayang vichaya. Hari rasa madira madati makta bhuvi vilokama nartama nirvisha. Shantakaram bhujagashayanam padmanabham suresham. Vishvadharam Gagana Sadrisham Meghavarnam Shubhangam Lakshmi Kantam Kamalanayanam Yogi Bidhyanagamyam Vande Vishnum Bhavabhayaharam Sarvalokaikanatam Jayati Janinivaso Deviki Janmavado Yaduvara Parishat Svaradorbhir Asyan Adharmam Sthirachara Vrijanakna Susmita Sri Mukhena Rajapura Vanitanam Bardhayan Kamadevam Baha Pirang Natavaravapu Karneo Karnikaram Bimbradvasa Kanaka Kapisham Vijayantim Jamalam Randran Verno Adhara Sudaya Purayan Gopa Vrindair Vrindaranyam Svapada Ramanam Pravishad Gita Kirtihi Sri Radhaya Pranaya Mahima Kidrisho Vanaya Vasvadyo Yenadbhuta Madhurima Kidrisho Vamadiyaha Sokyang Cha Syamad Anubhavata Kidrisham Veti Lobhat Tadbhavardha Samajani Satchi Garbha Sindhau Harito Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna